From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the Jack and Spike Show.
Welcome back to the Jack and Spike Show. Botox. Young people? It's a little unusual. Preventing wrinkles. Odd behavior. Wage gap in Washington continues to pair a couple of words together that I can't say on air because an utterance would be a disaster at this point in time.
Yesterday.
How do I say these words without...
Short shrift.
That is a
slowly...
It's a one-way ticket to the FCC, $50,000 fine. Very unusual that someone would write that. You know, it's not unusual, though, Andrew. Mr. John Curley on a Tuesday.
Present and accounted for.
How are you, Mr. Curley?
Great.
By the way, first person I texted this morning about my medical news, Mr. John Curley. Texting.
Yes, because I didn't know if I was going to have to be jumping in again. So glad you're back, fit as fiddle, right as rain.
John was basically talking about it like it was an inconvenience yesterday. I spoke to John last night. And I said, John, I had a bit of a heart incident on air yesterday. And he goes, yeah, I filled in for you. Just, you know.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Beautifully, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. And then he was more concerned about, did anybody say anything about me? That's what John said.
This is not true. This must be something left over from your heart attack.
Yeah, it's the remnants. It's plaque, mental plaque.
John, have you had any work done? You don't have to answer this question.
Oh, I get Botox and fillers. I get all sorts of stuff.
Really?
Natural hair growing back naturally and my teeth done. Yeah.
Botox
every 3 months.
Really?
Filler every 6 months.
Yeah. No. Are you serious?
I'm sure. Yeah.
I don't believe that for a second, John, because you look
I'm going to go. I'm getting a lower facelift in a couple of months.
No, you're not. Are you serious?
Yeah. Why not?
John, but you're like the picture of health. You look great. I would not believe
that. Yeah, because I got tons of testosterone swelled in my body. Yeah. I spent tens of thousands of dollars on all this crap.
Right.
You ever seen a classic 56 Chevy Bel Air?
Yeah.
Because it's had work done.
Yeah. Okay.
Work done.
When you get Botox, is it the injectable Botox they put in your system to basically numb your face, right? That's the way that it works? Is it prevents the wrinkles?
It paralyzes the muscle,
Okay.
It paralyzes the muscles.
But isn't that uncomfortable? Don't you want the expression of your face?
I will suffer for my vanity. I will suffer. It doesn't hurt that much.
Right.
It doesn't hurt that much.
But I've seen...
Two at the top on the left side above the eyebrows, two to the right, two to the left. Two down below your lower lip, and then that's about it, Fred. It's about $900 or something.
Like you know,
I never look at the price because I don't want to know.
You write all that off, though, right? For the cost of doing business in the public sphere.
No, they won't let me. I try.
Dang.
Oh, let me get you my tax guy, John. You got to lower your standards.
John,
yeah.
When I see someone like Judge Jeanine Pirro, or I see somebody, basically any woman who's on Fox News, I just feel bad because of the amount of work that they've had done. Do you know what I mean?
Know.
And it doesn't look good, and it looks bad. And I thought you were going to say, no, you've had nothing done because you look great, John. You're a lady killer.
But that's why, because I get all this stuff done. But Jack, I think, you know, they get too much done.
Okay.
They keep stretching it further and further back. Just subtle little tiny changes. This doesn't shock me that people are getting it younger because what you don't want the wrinkles in the first place. If you don't get the wrinkles in the first place, then you don't have to worry. You won't have the creases and stuff. So how old are these kids? Like 27 or something?
Yeah, they're real young. Real young. I mean, you're even talking about some people that I've seen on social media, they're as young as 23, 24 years old who are getting really extensive work done.
Yeah, let me just say that the reason I get this stuff done is, so I do like 70 gigs as an auctioneer all around the country, and you're just standing up there in front of people, all these really rich people that have had a lot of work done stuff. I just don't want to look old. You know, I don't want to look old. I mean, I know I look old. Occasionally, you look at myself, I'm like, good God, what's my father doing here? And I realize, oh, shoot, that's me.
Haunting you for bad decisions. That's what I found.
Yeah. Like, but, you know, I just... You know, you're in the public eye, not as a radio guy, obviously, but just, you know, they're at these auctions. So that's why.
That's why I only hang out with younger women. Do you see what I'm saying?
Is that why?
Because they keep you young. You know what I'm talking about? You guys know what I'm talking about.
I don't know.
Younger women.
I don't know what you're talking about. What are you talking about?
What I'm saying is
you
that
forget I was here?
Their youthful energy, Laura, fills you with youthful, like when I help people with like yoga or something like that, generally.
Yeah, when you help them with yoga.
So John, this is my concern, though, is that when I did a little bit of a deep dive into researching the amount of plastic plastic surgery that Americans have gotten over the last 25 years. And it's increased to levels that seem like we have an unhealthy obsession with appearing as if we are youthful, when in reality, really basic things like sunscreen and low-level hormone treatment work just as well as all these other expensive whatevers in order to try to fix. And also, John, like I am okay looking older. I am okay. I've got a fully gray beard.
Says the guy who's not old.
I'm 30. Yeah, I'm 36, but my beard looks like it can collect Social Security.
Just screw yourself.
So is this T-shirt, Jack.
Yeah. That was a great bit that you guys just stepped on.
No,
that was
not
a great joke that I just had.
Oh my!
What was the joke? Sorry. Did anybody catch it? That was an A+ joke.
No.
That your beard is
can't
old.
Do it again in 20 years, right? And you're old.
Andrew, did you catch it? Did you catch it? Did nobody catch it? It was that I'm 36, but my beard is old enough to collect Social Security. That was the joke.
Brilliant.
That's now been ruined. So, but John, there is a fixation on being youthful, and I think that we need to have a more of an appreciation of aging with grace and aging with dignity. And not trying to hold on or cling to the vestiges of youth because we appear in front of people or whatever it might be, right?
But there's nothing graceful about aging. You can prolong the quality of your life longer by taking steps now, but there's nothing graceful about it. And the reason people don't admire it culturally, because biologically we are predetermined to look for youth. We like youth. We like healthy. You know, you just, people are, oh, you know, she's beautiful. You know, she's 7 years old. Yeah, for a 7 year old, but people are naturally drawn to youth. Now, we do hold it in a higher regard in the United States than in other countries. I get that because young stuff, the energy, all that stuff sells. That's why you have 12 year old girls, you know, in clothes that they probably shouldn't be wearing, but it's, again, you combine youth and sex. And that's what sells.
It's called the Draper effect, Jack.
What do you mean?
Don Draper. Yes. Marketing started like that. I mean, as soon as we got visual mediums, we got exploitation of age and sexuality.
Right, yeah.
Absolutely true. And it hasn't letting up at all.
Indeed, it's very bizarre. Well, the wage gap in Washington shows women and minorities continue to get the short shrift, which, again, whoever wrote that is trying to get somebody fired on air, because that is a dangerous series of words. And also, does anybody say shrift anymore? It's a fairly antiquated language, but that doesn't matter. So the problem with these kinds of studies, as per usual, is that they're longitudinal. John, I mean, you and I have talked about this a number of times. You can't take longitudinal data and then apply it to everyone writ large, because women tend to do this thing called getting pregnant, meaning that they are not in the workforce for a certain amount of years of their life. And so when you try to take a man's longitudinal data, money earned over the course of his life, and then you compare it to a woman's money earned over the course of her life, when she's missing 10, 15, 20 years from the workforce, it's going to be less, which is the fault of a lot of these studies. When you talk about, so when you talk about minorities making less than other people, that's against, that is a federal offense. If that was real, there would be lawsuits in every state across the nation. So what they do is they take bad data and then they try to say there's a wage gap, when in actuality, it is against the law to pay someone less for the same job.
Yeah, Spike, that's a garbage article.
Well, I think these trends are going to reverse, because nowadays more women are going to college, more women are getting degrees, more women are getting executive positions.
But the trend's not real. The trend's not real. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I hear you. But I think
Spike is right. Spike is right. More women going, more women getting degrees, more than men. Yes, but what they're studying and what they're getting degrees in are the lowest paying jobs. 99% social workers, 97% female in K-12.
Teaching jobs.
Majority of the jobs that they get are the majority of the studies that they get are the lowest paid jobs. But if you look at the highest paid majors, the highest paid college study majors that then cash in and pay big money, overrepresented overwhelmingly by men. From petroleum engineers to math and science to aerospace, it's all men. Women aren't in it, so they are doing college majors that don't pay that well. So
if you want to talk about
college, but they're coming out with jobs that don't pay as much.
But if you want to talk about wage inequity, you got to take equal jobs served on equal time. And like Jack said, there are federal laws prohibiting you from paying somebody a lesser amount for the same job based on their sex or any other
classification. Can I tell you guys what woke me up to this reality? Because I used to think that the wage gap was a real thing.
That's what we were told time and time again.
This is what happened. There was a major newspaper that I shall not name.
and they got rid of their editor-in-chief, and he was replaced by a woman. Now, his exiting salary when he left that job was somewhere in the neighborhood of about $11 million a year, okay? When she comes in, they start her at a salary of $10 million a year. And everybody says, aha, wage gap. She's being paid less for the same amount of work. But what they didn't realize is that he had been hired 15 years earlier.
Right.
So when you adjust it for inflation, she was making significantly more than he made when he was first hired for that same position.
Right. He's being rewarded for tenure and experience.
Right. Yeah. But instead, I'm watching Wolf Blitzer, and I'm watching everybody on CNN whine and cry about this major newspaper that is now paying a woman less to be editor-in-chief, not realizing that she is making more based on her experience level contrasted with his experience level 15 years ago. And so the whole thing kind of fell apart for me, and I thought, why is this such a thing that people lie about regularly when the date... Yeah. So why do you think that is, John? Is the question. Why do you think
people... I don't know, but it just keeps going and going and going. Here it is in 30 seconds. Take every single job that men do and women do. Then they do the medium, they do the average. Well, men get paid. Men do jobs that make them more money than women. There are more men that do underwater welding than there are women. There are more women that are social workers making $35,000 a year. So when you just take a look at all the jobs, they don't do, you know, brain surgeon to brain surgeon. But when they do that, they find out the brain surgeon male might work more, might take more chances, might work on more complicated cases, might not step out to have a kid, might work overtime. So when you look at the real factors, you filter them in there, the difference is not that much. But I don't know why this lie continues.
I think that it's because there is an idea out there that somehow we're effectively being propagandized to subsidize the years in which a woman leaves the workforce, which rather than just say that should there be a federal program for new moms, which just pays out like Social Security, rather than saying that, it's, well, geez, women make less money than men do. Yeah. I wonder why. And so I think that in many ways, it's just like continual propaganda that just gets dumped into people's faces. Whereas if, I don't know, if Kate Stone wasn't making as much as Sam Campbell for doing the same job, Kate Stone would have a huge lawsuit on her
hands. Sure would.
So where is the discrepancy here is something that always drives me up a wall.
And before anybody points out pro sports, how the WNBA is paid so much less than the NBA, that's about revenue generation. And the NBA, the guys will bring in so much more money through TV contracts, through whatever else it is, and they're paid accordingly. Same thing when the women's soccer players fought for equal pay. That was valid because women's soccer, from a monetary ticket selling, merchandising, women's soccer brings in the same amount of money as the men. It's
John,
not the same in the NBA.
Tell me if I can't ask you about this story on air, or tell me if you can't say it. But that story about, didn't you work with an anchor at one point in time, and she was making like five or six times the amount of money that you were making?
She was $250,000. I was at $50,000, and we both had the exact same job.
Right.
And when I asked for parity, no. And when I said, well, how about half? And they said, no, she has 15 years of experience. You only have 1 year.
Yeah.
I said, yeah, but I'm doing just half as much. I'm doing the same amount of work. No. It's like, okay. So
what
of that job?
Have you ever seen or witnessed anybody being paid less than somebody else as an injustice and decided to stand up for them, John? You ever been in that circumstance?
No, I never heard of anything like that before, Spike.
You're a good man, John. You're a good man.
So Dave Calhoun is the next Boeing CEO to be a success, and he has more than you're gonna have to read that for me. I'm laughing still.
Dave Calhoun needs the next Boeing CEO to be a success, as he has more than $45 million riding on it. In his exit package, is tied to Boeing stock predominantly.
Right.
So if Boeing doesn't right the ship and get the plane up in the air, it could cost Dave Calhoun a whole lot of money.
What do you think's going on with Boeing, John, in your estimation?
Boeing's had trouble for 20 years, and they really, really need to culturally shift back, get away from bankers and get back to engineers.
There you go.
I have a friend of mine that works very closely with Boeing, and he said the greatest thing they could possibly do is show a cultural gigantic paradigm shift. All those guys get on a plane from Chicago, fly into Seattle and plant a flag and say, we are back. This is the place that launched the greatest company. These are the people that we want to work with. We don't care about shareholders as much as we have in the last 20 years. We got to care about the engineers. We got to start making great planes again.
You know, Frank Shires had the same assessment of that when he came on and he talked about it. Now, Spike actually had this idea they got to come back to Washington State. Got to bring it back.
At least the new CEO, he's got to have an office above the workshop.
From a
figurative perspective, you can't be a company that's worried about getting planes out the door more than you are about keeping planes in the air. And that's what Boeing has become. Like John said, when you start worrying about stock dividends and return on investors, more importantly than building the best absolute aircraft on the face of the earth. And they've gone away from that. Got to get back to it.
I don't like them cutting corners building airplanes, you know?
Yeah, but
right, cheaper parts.
This was my thought, and everyone's going to hate me for this take, but think of, isn't it a testament to Boeing as a company that these planes had massive failures and still flew in the air, still landed? You know what I mean? Isn't it a testament to the integrity of that product that a literal hole can be blown in the side of that plane?
And it lands safely.
And it lands safely.
It testament to the engineers and the manufacturers and the pilots.
Remember, I always fly Alaska, right? Yeah. I mean, it has not stopped me from flying. I will continue to fly. John, I know that you have to fly for your business, but do you ever think to yourself as you're sitting in 1A?
Never.
You'll never be a, if it's Boeing, I ain't going kind of guy.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. I asked the flight attendant about that on Saturday, and she said, no, nobody says anything like, oh, is this a 737 MAX?
Yeah.
800, 900? Oh, I'm getting off. No.
I'll wait for an Airbus, thanks. Yeah, okay. Good on you.
Mr. Curley can be heard every single Monday through
please.
Friday.
Welcome back, Jack.
Thank you, John. You know, John actually was very sweet to me, if I can say this, because when I called John yesterday, he said, call me in the morning, and if you feel dizzy or you don't feel good or whatever,
I'll be there for you.
I'll be there for you.
Thank you a thousand times over,
so,
John.
You're really, welcome, Spike.
John is a sweetheart of a man.
All right, I'm going away. Goodbye. Bye, guys.
John is a good person, despite what everybody says about him. We'll take a really quick break when we get back. Side hustles are becoming more and more of a thing because loyalty is dead. What will we ever do? My job doesn't pay me enough, so everyone's talking about side hustles. What is your side hustle? My side hustle is my charm. It's my boyish charm.
You monetize that?
Monetize it like you would not believe the amount of free stuff that I get.
Outstanding.
Take a really quick break. We'll be right back right after this. That's right. We have a YouTube channel. You can go and you can watch digital exclusive content where Spike and I talk about things that require a little bit of a visual element.
A little bit.
Terrestrial, radio friendly, visual. It doesn't really work out very well, right, Laura?
Today's was Spike reacting to the footage of the Baltimore.
Right. And also,
collapsing.
I learned about a thing in football that I had no idea was a thing that I actually had to watch to actually fully
understand.
It's banned
by the NFL. Now we know why.
So Gen Z has decided to embrace side hustles because loyalty is dead. Much like God, loyalty is gone from any kind of corporate entity. Now, this is something that I would have been talking about for a long time, which is that we have no more relationship with businesses in the way that we previously had relationships to businesses. I say this story all the time, but I'll say it again because it sounds so good. My grandfather was the vice president of personnel for GT&E back when they were a company. And when he retired after years of dedicated service, I mean, this is a guy who started out, he was hanging electric wires in Arizona and Texas when the company was just putting in electrical cabling, telephone cabling. He's up there, works his way up through the company. He's, you know, doing this and that, eventually becomes vice president of personnel. Big old important guy.
Serious.
He retires. They give him an Omega watch. I still have that watch to this day. On the back of it, it says, thank you, Owen, for years of service or whatever it might be. You know, here's your $8,000 Omega watch.
Yeah.
He goes off and he retires into the sunset to go on to horrifically abuse his grandson for about a decade. So on that happy note.
Always a happy ending.
He had a pension from that.
Yes,
he had a certain amount of loyalty with that company. That simply doesn't exist for a lot of people anymore. And what I find really troubling is that when I read articles like this about how Gen Zs are going out and they're making soaps and making baby bonnets or, you know, wheelchairs for disabled dogs or whatever it is, yeah, and selling them on Etsy, even though that's fun and nice, I don't think that we should be embracing this system. We have a sincere disdain for poverty in this country. We have an aversion to it, so much so that when we see people who say $7.25 is not a livable wage, they go, oh, yeah, well, not in San Francisco, but it certainly is in Little Rock.
Right. Why don't you move somewhere?
Right. And so we have this thing where we say, okay, but like $7.25 is trash. It's garbage. It's literally not livable.
Exploitative.
And I say that as a filthy capitalist. But unfortunately, what's happened is that so many people have been, I think, conditioned into being not empathetic whatsoever to people's needs. If people want to understand how bad it is for Americans, go to the Poverty Finance subreddit on Reddit. So you go to reddit.com and you go to Poverty Finance, and then you will see people who are having to make decisions about how do I make a tube of toothpaste last longer. Wow. That's how poor they are. I read a woman who was talking about how in order to pay for her child's dental health care needs, even though she has a car, she leaves it parked in her garage. She works two jobs. She walks to both jobs. So because she can't afford the gas, insurance.
Yeah,
so even though the car has gas in it, she has to make a decision as to whether or not she walks to work or drives to work. So I think that people should really understand, like, we might have a lot of esoteric wealth in the United States. We might have a lot of quote unquote opportunities in the United States. But also simultaneously and paradoxically, we have such disdain for people when they need the most from us that we say, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, which, if you don't know, is a phrase that was an insult at the turn of the century, which was a task that could not physically be done. You cannot pull yourself up by your bootstraps. That's why it was told to people in the same way that people say, don't hold your breath.
Right.
It's an insult. Yeah. It's meant to demean somebody, right? So I have a very hard time with this like grind set mindset that people try to push onto these Gen Zers who are going to be burnt out and suicidal by the time they're 30. Laura, you're picking up what I'm putting down as a Zoomer, right? No?
What, that I have very little in savings? And
that, yes.
And no loyalty to your employer?
No. So
don't ask me that.
Well, you called it right out of the gate, man. Today's generation of Gen Z has no loyalty because employers have no loyalty to Gen Z.
Right.
That's a two-way street. Your grandfather worked his life. He had a wonderful pension at the end of it. Nowadays, corporate profits and stock dividend returns, that's what companies care about, not the employees that they hire, that they go through like grist for the mill and churn and burn these people to make sure the corporate dollars. Amazon's the most glaring example of this. All they care about is corporate profits and the bottom line.
I would say any company. I would say Walmart.
Yeah, I mean, single out Amazon, but working for Amazon in the fulfillment end of it is horrible.
For sure, yeah.
And they can't keep. They're always recruiting because they're always churning and burning people. How can you expect your employees to be loyal to a company when a company will show no loyalty to its employees?
Well, they can't, right? Because if you're loyal to your employees, then you're going to have to cut into your profit margins, and that's a really difficult. And here's the funny thing about it. You and I using this kind of language, people will say, leftists, and they'll freak out. You know what I mean? Talking about Americans who are working in a capitalist system, which is unfair to them, just by talking about it, just by pointing out and diagnosing the issues within the system, they'll go, leftist.
And Marxist, then, socialist.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is about it is that if you read capitalist writing from 1910, 1920, 1930, 1940, they are talking about and being critical of the mercantilist system that we had in the United States previously, and talking about how it failed Americans. Nobody was calling them socialists or Marxists, but that's because people don't read anymore, because people don't bother to read anymore, because people don't want to learn anything anymore, because they'd rather have people who say stuff that they agree with rather than be challenged to actually say, why do we let all of these megacorps basically rape and pillage this country for all of its resources and then put all their money in offshore accounts? Thanks for that, Vivek Ramaswamy, by the way.
Yeah.
True American hero who hides all of his wealth in the Bahamas. Great job, America first and all that. When you start to say that, people go, ugh. Like, ugh, you're talking about me. No, I'm not. I'm not in no way, shape, or form being critical of people who are supportive of the beautiful neoliberal capitalist system that we live under. you can be supportive of it and also at the same time be critical of where it fails the American people, which by and large it's failing, if I had to ballpark it, somewhere in the neighborhood of about a third of the population in the United States.
Yeah, it can't be sustained at that clip.
No, absolutely. You want to hear a funny story about that watch, by the way?
Your grandfather's retirement watch?
Yeah, the Omega watch.
Yeah.
When he died, everybody descended on his home and they plucked it like vultures.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
I lived through that too.
I'm getting this lamp, I'm getting this couch, yep. I'm getting this leather bound, whatever. And what they didn't realize is that his favorite, his most cherished possessions were three things. It was a pencil from his dad's laundry company that he had in Everett. It was his old pencil, like the 1910s. It was a Coast Guard manual that they gave him when he enlisted in the Coast Guard that had all of his notes in it.
Yeah.
And it was that Omega watch. And for whatever reason, when I show up and the whole house is basically gutted.
Yeah, because none of them knew the man.
What do I find in the throwaway bin but the pencil that his father gave him from his business, a business that he started in Everett, his Coast Guard manual, and that Omega watch? What do I find? Isn't that so funny?
The three things he treasured.
Isn't that so funny? Everybody else, his pocket watch collection, yep. Gone. Yeah. His pocket knife collection, gone. His pipes, gone. All the vultures swooping in to take all of his stuff.
Yeah.
They didn't even know the guy well enough to know what are his three most cherished possessions.
And someday you'll pass those along.
I'm selling them. What are you talking about, Spike? I'm going to make sweet money.
You got a nice side hustle,
dude. It's like a 1968 Omega vintage. It still works, dude. Engraved? Are you kidding me? That thing's got to be worth like at least 10 G's right now. And I'm going to go gambling for that money.
This article from the Washington Post celebrates the side hustle because nobody can live on one income anymore. I mean, way to find the ray of sunshine in the storm cloud of what we're doing in this next generation.
I mean, I can live on one income. I can tell you that my ex-wife certainly can live on my income. You know what I'm talking about?
Living on one income. Nice work. Yeah.
All right, we'll take a really quick break when we get back. A lot of people texted in about my medical emergency, and so I wanted to address any concerns that anybody might have had about that. There were quite a few, so I thought that we could talk about it.
You recapped earlier what we went through yesterday.
Yeah, if you want to listen to the actual story of what happened yesterday when I had a medical emergency, you can go find our podcast at the My Northwest app, or you can find it on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It's a noon hour. And you can listen to everything that happened as it happened to me in real time and why I had to leave the show yesterday and why I was having a bad time. And you also get to hear paramedics celebrating John Curley while I want to go to the hospital.
They can't let a guy who knows John Curley have any. Okay, you got to live.
We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back right after this. So I'm living a semi-charmed kind of life. G major. He's in G. Did you know
beautiful.
That?
I had no idea. It's I don't know G. G. So you've got a great ear.
Fact check me on that. Andrew, is this in G? This has got to be in G, right?
It'd be G.
Yeah?
You can hear this. You can probably get the keyboard going.
G major, is that what it is? Oh man, I got perfect pitch.
I'm glad you're still
here.
And
I like to show it to ladies. Yeah, okay, so I had a medical emergency yesterday, and basically I had what's called a rhythmic palpitation. I had a very big one. And so I had to step out of the studio. If you want to hear that story, you can go and you can listen to it on the podcast that comes out on Apple, Spotify, or the My Northwest app is usually the best place to get it. But a bunch of people texted in, so I thought we'd read some of these. Someone said, yay, I'm so happy to hear your voice, Jack. I was worried about you. Thank you so much. Norma says, Laura, please tell Jack, I'm so sorry he had his medical emergency yesterday. I was wondering what happened to him. Well, I thought that I was having a heart attack, I think is the best way to put it.
Yeah.
Heart attacks run in my family, but I'm very physically fit. So basically what happened is that I had, I'm such a hypochondriac that I had a little chest thump, and then I went, I'm dying, and I ran out of the studio. Mike at the 360.
Give yourself more credit than that, pal. You handle it really, really
I
well.
I punched Spike and I said, I'm dying. And then I ran outside and I kicked everybody's trash cans over. And then I took the fire extinguisher off the wall and I sprayed it in the air. And I said, get me an ambulance. All right. Mike in the 360 said, Jack handled it very professionally on air. I'm glad that Jack is okay. That is great news. As much grief as I give you guys on a weekly basis. Happy face. I thought everybody handled yesterday about as calm, cool, and collected as you can get. Thank you so much, Mike. I don't remember The last thing I remember is looking at Laura and Laura making a cheese face and then me saying, I'm about to pass out. That's what I remember.
You had a weird look in your eyes. It was kind of a blank stare. It wasn't like you were really with us.
No, I was. I felt like, to be honest with you, I don't remember. I remember Chuck coming in.
Do you? Okay.
But I don't remember anything we talked about for that entire
period
of time.
That's what scares me is that you've lost that 20 minutes of your recollection.
I think it's because I had a panic attack.
Yeah.
It was and then I was like, oh, I'm going to die. And then I knew it was the vaccine. I knew it, Spike. I knew it. Finally got me. It's a turbo cancer that's in the vaccine. So, Jax, thank you for the medical update. I am sure that I was not the only one worried about your well-being. Glad to hear you're doing better and you're following up on it. Thank you so much.
People recommending cardiologists to you, by the way. I mean, we don't name the guy, but if you don't have one, find one. Get checked out.
I'll be okay.
I got a
different kind of doctor who's a very good doctor.
That's good to hear.
It's a free doctor who's my doctor, which is the best kind of doctor. So, hey, Jack, I was wondering if that would be considered an L&I claim if you would have gotten hospitalized since you were on the job. Maybe. I don't know. I would have to say that somehow the conditions of my work contributed to my... You know what I mean? Like the legalese on that would have to be Laura made me so mad.
No.
That I had an arrhythmic palpitation.
It's me. Play the tape of that segment. I stomped on one of your jokes and it was so heartbreaking.
Right, exactly. But you know what I mean? Like the L&I claim would have to be Andrew timed out the intro to the segment wrong and I got mad and thus had a cardiac arrhythmia. Who wouldn't panic if they thought we were having a heart attack? I've experienced one. Glad Jack is okay. Thank you for that. I'm glad for all the well-wishers out there. Rachel in Auburn. Jack, I'm so glad you're okay. I was watching on the studio cams when you got up and walked off and was really worried. And as far as Billy Sunshine, please let him stay. I've been listening since he was on Cairo Nights. Oh, that's another vote for Billy to stay. No, what are we going to do?
It was razor thin, but some late voting has come in Billy's behalf.
Exactly.
We'll try it again next week, see how it goes.
Jack, I'm so happy you're fine, but what a great story and also hilarious. Yeah, I have found that even this is going to make me sound like such a terrible person. When bad things are happening to me, my first thought is, how do I make this a bit? Does that make sense?
How do I make this
a thing?
Yeah, how can I get mileage out of this?
Like, you know how I almost got hit by that box truck, right?
Yeah.
So that was my...
Funny.
But then, like, I'll give you another example. I was running one time in Santa Cruz, California.
Okay.
And it's a June morning, beautiful, you know, so it's the kind of morning where it's like 70 degrees at like 8 o'clock in the morning. It's absolutely gorgeous. So I'm running. I'm doing my long distance running. And it was a weekday. So the boardwalk that's there, the theme park, is totally, totally empty.
Oh.
And people are just starting to kind of trickle in to maybe see if they can get tickets early to actually get into the boardwalk. And there's a weird intersection there. It's like a T intersection. And when no one is coming down the long way, they think that they can just take that right, even though the light is red. But they are wrong because people are running or they're riding bikes or whatever it is. So I'm got my headphones on, and I'm listening to Katy Perry's Firework, not by choice, but because it was on my random Apple mix.
Okay, careful.
And so Katy Perry's Firework is playing as I am running, and I go to say, "This, I don't want to listen to this," and as I go to grab my phone to switch the song, a car hits me. Boom, right.
In the intersection?
Yeah, right in the intersection. Oh. They ran the red light, and they just hit me. Boom. Now, they weren't going fast enough for it to cause damage, and I went up onto the hood, right? But my thought was, as the person got out of the car and they were, oh my God, are you okay? Are you okay? Okay. I just thought, how funny would it be if they hit me and I was knocked unconscious, and when the paramedics show up, all they hear very faintly in the background is, maybe you're a firework. And then they go, okay, this guy's a weirdo because he's running shirtless. And listening to Katy Perry, and then I would die, and people would think that I was a Katy Perry fan. And isn't that so funny?
That's what we'd play at your service, because that's what Jack wanted.
Jack was a firework. That's why he listened to this song on repeat. Hey, good show, everybody. Andrew, A+. Nate Connors back at it again with the invisible suit. Oh, man. Jeez, Nate Connors. Killing it in the fashion department, my friend. Laura, A+. Spike, we'll give you a solid C+ today.
Thanks, brother.
Please, solid C+. Here, my friend's quote of the day.
Nice shooting, son. What's your name?
I don't want to pass out in the studio. That's bad radio, because no one can see it.
Great television, but bad radio.